All right, well, thank you guys for coming to this morning's presentation. I'm excited to be here. My name is Pat Bolton. I'm an IBM Distinguished Engineer, and I'm the Chief Technology Officer for our Mobility and Workplace Services. And myself, a colleague, Murray Mitchell, and a couple of our clients from American Airlines are going to share the stage today. We're going to talk to you about what it takes to become a best-in-class digital workplace, really the migration, the transformation that we're all going through to become a digital workplace. So my perspective is from infrastructure services and the kind of trends that are impacting us. I'll talk a little bit about how cloud services are being delivered to the end user and how that's impacting just the way we look at provisioning and deploying not just the devices, but the operating system with current branch for business and Windows 10, and all of the applications and tools that users need to become productive. And Murray's going to talk about a specific instance of how we use that, how that becomes an enabler in a contact center, and helps a client like American Airlines be able to deliver better customer service and better support to their field. So let me go ahead and get started. So I already mentioned that this view of the new workplace we're referring to as the digital workplace. You know, for a while we were back in the PC lifecycle, we were very interested in deploying and managing just a single endpoint, PCs. And then mobility kind of came in, and we've got phones and BlackBerries to manage. That transformed quickly to going from the enablement of mobile devices to really adopting applications that began to leverage the mobile enterprise. We called it mobile first at IBM. And now you see it's really moving into the fabric of everything that we do. Office 365, collaboration suites like Skype for Business are all being interwoven with the base platform to be a much richer and really an easier to manage environment. So getting into this a little bit, what's really changed? Back in the day, I mentioned we had the PC refresh lifecycle, which we all kind of knew and loved. Everything was very rooted in this kind of very rigid environment where the chipset, the operating system, the applications, and even the user profile were all packaged together in that image that we had. And it was really one of device-centric, a very device-centric model. The data was on the devices. It was always kind of a challenge to protect data on devices, encrypting hard drives and all of that. And the users were very tied to the device. They were tied to the device, and often they were tied to being at a network, at a physical network. Today, we see this evolving to a much more user-centric model. We see the end user really as the focal point of everything we're trying to do in terms of enabling. It's the user experience. It's the notion of an as-a-service model, really making the process of installing new operating systems, upgrading systems, and patching on a regular basis almost transparent to the end user and much easier for the central organization. I think a lot of the changes today, in fact, are going to radically change what we've known as the idle process. I mean, you're probably very familiar with idle. I call this today kind of where we're moving, the post-idle world in a lot of ways, because some of these fundamental changes and the introduction of cognitive support to make the experience for the end user, whether it's in a CRM environment or a traditional service desk, it's really radically changing that. We care a lot about how to provide the end user with new ways to work and with new ways to engage either your business or to engage their own IT organizations in a way that really makes it easier than it used to be, and much, much more about choice. How does a user want to interact with the system? Do they want to experience a chat? Is it someone who still wants to call a service desk? Do they want to pull an app? We're really giving the end users a lot of choice today. So in this, what are some of the hallmarks of this transformation that we see going on? There's a kind of an enterprise maturity model that I think of. And often when I talk to the CTO or CIO for a client organization, it's kind of like, I'd like to hear and know where they are in this journey. And in most cases, what I find is elements of the organization are going to be kind of at every stage, at every stage of this journey. In fact, I, in chatting a little bit with our guests from American Airlines, they were saying that they're just getting rid of some of their BlackBerries. And we know in the BlackBerry world, we had basically phone, calendar, and a VPN access if we were pretty sophisticated. And that was really the era of basic enablement. Just establishing some enterprise policies, beginning to allow mobile access to your environment, syncing calendars, that was really the first wave. Then for a long time, we've been talking about mobile productivity. How do we leverage the mobile platform? How do we allow people to bring their own devices? Because as many of us have found out, certainly within IBM, they're going to do it anyway. So how do we develop those policies that enable BYOD and in some ways reduce the cost of IT in an organization by enabling that? So what did that look like? We were understanding what the employee needs were around mobile devices, developing a more sophisticated mobile strategy, perhaps by use case, beginning to understand how we would deploy devices and what we would allow by end user and their role in the organization. And we were building these, building a more robust capability for deploying mobile devices, mobile phones, Androids, iPhones, Windows phones, just a whole set of, a whole much richer set of devices that the end user could use or choose to work from. The transformation to the digital workplace, in my view, assumes that we have a mobile-ready environment. It assumes that we've developed an approach to applications in our business that now are at a point where they're going to leverage the channels of mobile devices to do business in whole new ways. To, like the insurance company, they were really ahead of the game by radically transforming their claims process to use the camera device to be able to take a picture and process a claim kind of virtually through an agent all the way through the delivery, the supply chain of the delivery provider without you having to interact in that old kind of driving your car in to get it. So that's the kind of transformation that we see happening in business. Now, where I think this is going, we've got the digital workplace, and a lot of organizations are still kind of at the point of wanting to transform to this digital workplace, moving off of a lot of the old hardware infrastructure into a much more virtual world, much more nimble environment as a service, leveraging all of this mobile capability. Where are we going to go with that, and where is it taking us next? And that's really where we're moving to the notion of a social workplace. So as we're able to use rich sources like Yammer of contact and collaboration sources in an organization to create a stronger social environment, I think that's really, we're really finally at the place where having a digital workplace is going to allow us to do that. So I want to talk a little bit about what we see in terms of the trends and what are the really, we see three concrete trends really impacting this right now. Impacting the way we as a service organization, so the part of IBM that I work for, provides services to clients. We manage about 3.5 million endpoints. We handle millions of calls a month through our service desks. And we support every aspect of end users. So we kind of have this, and internally we have about 400,000 employees that we provide IT services to. So we have kind of our own lab for seeing how this environment works and what the key trends are. So these three important trends that I think are impacting the workplace and how we manage this are the fact that now increasingly applications are being delivered from outside of the organization. So cloud-based Office 365, collaboration services delivered. We see more financial services suites being delivered as a service. So they're coming to your endpoints from outside of the organization. from a variety of clouds outside of your organization. Agile and evergreen platforms are a real profound change that I think you're just beginning to hit. I think with Windows 10, current branch for business is going to allow us to see some of that evergreen notion, so we will not find ourselves in those major migration efforts, again, that we're probably all very familiar with from the past 10 years. This is not just in the operating system, but from an applications point of view, too. I think some of you who might be familiar with, for example, Citrix Cloud Services, now all of the back end, what you used to have to upgrade in the environment, are being upgraded in the cloud and delivered as a service. Images, those kind of things may still sit on premise, but increasingly that the guts of it, the management components, are being upgraded in the background and just pushed. So this is a big change. And this really impacts this release management notion. Extending the capabilities of device management, for many years we've had MDMs, mobile device management companies that provided primarily worked a set of commands that could work with the API of any device, of a mobile device. So you had, a whole field of Mobile Iron, AirWatch, FiberLink, all of these other sources that were out there just managing devices. We think that that whole notion of device management is shifting. It's moving up. It's becoming lighter and cross-platform. So, I kind of think that in the future, much in the way that Intune is becoming part of the way we manage mobile devices, and it's built into the fabric of the operating system and of Office 365, we see those MDM functions kind of moving up the stack. So they're no longer just managing a device, but they're really looking across devices. So we think that it's going to become a thinner device management layer, and capable of driving, your any end user device you have. It's a PC, increasingly even some components, wearable components, phones, tablets, across the board, that we'll be seeing the same kind of device capability managing that whole area. So that's affecting the way organizations have to provide services to the end user, and it's affecting the way services companies provide to the end user. So we think that overall, this entire digital workplace, instead of being, our old ghosted images, will be delivered largely as a service. So in fact, we think of the operating system now, we call it, within our delivery environment, Win10 as a service. So we're thinking of this instead of one major deployment of providing that kind of monthly consumable consumption-based service. Services and applications are provisioned internally and externally from the enterprise, so being able to broker and understand what your whole licensing program is, that's really kind of changing the way we think about services. Enterprise software distribution, one significant change is the fact that cognitive, from a services perspective, the combination of analytics and automation, when I think of analytics and automation, you have to monitor things so you know what's going on. Then you have to have some algorithms to say, okay, now I know what's going on, what do I want to do with it? And then you've got to actuate, you've got to understand what you need to do to actuate that, the automation piece of it. When you turn just that kind of automation into cognitive, what you're doing is you're putting that whole process in context of learning, understanding patterns, and being able to automatically learn that. So moving to a point where we're applying automatic fixes, analytics, the understanding of performance, application performance at the glass, at the end user device level, this is really kind of bringing the idea of automation and cognitive, in some ways like we've thought of in data centers, out into the end user devices. And this I think is going to have a profound impact on how we manage and really what we can do with devices. This also challenges IT to think of itself a little differently. So if we have all of these pieces that are working, we've got applications coming from outside, the world. We've got mobile device management now being embedded into the systems. Our goal, and the way we think about this environment, is to create a composable workplace. So any device that you have, when it's delivered to an end user, can automatically connect, understand what the components are, and it will be shipped with the image that it needs. No longer are you ghosting images and provisioning them in that way, but it arrives, you open it up, it connects automatically to an environment for authentication of the end user. It's able to establish a working environment very quickly for an end user, so there's not this huge delay, and they begin to pull down the applications in the context of the platform that are needed to make that device work in the context of an organization and do that in the background automatically. Then we have app stores that can be provisioned and enabled by user type or user profile. So we see this, we're thinking of this in terms of the notion of a composable workplace. What we like to say is that, you know, one of our kind of guiding lights is that its essential purpose of workplace technology is to securely deliver the appropriate IT and business capability to the end user on their device of choice based on the IT policies and the user's role in the organization. That's kind of a long sentence, but really this is most succinctly what we're trying to do in the workplace environment today. Now that requires that you understand a few things about your environment. And what we found is that there are these three things: the user, knowing the user and understanding the user's role in the environment; the applications, what applications, not just what applications are people asking to have installed, but what applications are they opening up? What are they using? How much are they using them? Really understanding your application usage patterns and understanding what your devices are. So your devices, your applications, and your users, knowing them to a better degree than we have before, is really important to this notion of creating an environment where you can compose a workplace. You can compose it from native applications that are pushed to the device or the environment. It can be hybrid applications. Some of you know where you've got part of it running in an HTML environment and part of it being served from the back. I think some complex complex elements of SAP or something like that. Maybe using a mobile application that's native to the device to consume or leverage the channels on the device, and using the back-end processing and syncing those things. So that notion of really hybrid on the device, or being served completely from the cloud as cloud-based Office 365 productivity suite might be. So that idea of being able to take your policies and the user's role in the organization and compose that workplace, we think are going to make a real powerful difference to the ease of deploying devices. A couple of points on the bottom of this slide are really, that's really a little bit of an IBM advertisement there. Just the fact that we are a leader in Gartner, Forrester, and Current Analysis for our workplace thinking, for how we're envisioning this future, and our ability to deliver those services. So what does this kind of all boil down to? There are kind of, if I think of it, again, from the user's perspective, the user wants, know me, know what I'm doing. When I pick up the phone or if I'm in a chat environment, understand my environment so that I don't have to sit there and go through, tell you what operating system I'm running, blah, blah, blah. Really know me, know who I am, know what I need in the organization. Help me provide, use some of these new channels and these new capabilities to support me in new ways, and then deliver insights to the organization, deliver insights to the user about how they're using it, but deliver insights to the business so the business can understand how their end users are using applications, what they need, the performance capabilities, or the performance, I like to call it performance of the glass. Leverage knowledge management in ways that we haven't before. And really be able to use some of the data that we collect in a way to enable it. Let me go back and talk a little bit about personas. So many of you may be familiar with kind of the business management view of personas. Gary the bank teller, and Jeff the sales rep, and, you know, Marge the exec, and those kind of generic terms that we'll get from a business definition. We've taken it a step further. So within IBM, 400,000 people, we have 14 personas that we maintain across the organization. And it's those personas and the physical, a set of physical, what I call non-functional requirements, you know, where's the person, what kind of a network are they on, that allow us to really begin to compose what does that user have access to, what data do they have access to, and understand what is allowed, for example, to be data at rest on a device, a specific device, what we have to do with data in motion, and really begin to give us a little bit more insight to what that user is. So how do we do that, and how do you get there? One way is obviously the kind of observational technique that you go, you understand what your users are doing, what they need, you ask them, you interview them, you watch them go through the cycle. We take it a step further. What we like to do is we deploy a very thin agent out to all of those devices, and we collect data for between 4 and 6 weeks, and we understand then, we develop a profile, and we match with that kind of persona a more analytical profile, a quantitative profile of what applications are actually being used, what networks are being accessed, what web services are being provisioned, and really get a much more accurate quantitative picture of what those roles are. And sometimes that causes us to alter a little bit how we view those personas. So the qualitative and the quantitative really give you a better view of who your users are. A few things about the changing world of support. I think most of you were seeing, you would kind of think, and if you talk about it, we all know that chat and chat interfaces, we use those commercially a lot. You would think that they'd be being adopted, I would think that they would be being adopted faster in the user environment for kind of service desk. And we're finding that in organizations, they're just kind of beginning to use chat compared to the volume of calls. I really believe, though, that chat as a primary interface to service is going to rapidly take over. And if not chat, then that kind of voice interaction, voice like Cortana or Watson or Amelia or any number of those kind of new voice-based. In the end, they are actually chat-based. You'll find there's sort of a voice translation, if you will, but I think that chat, that more natural interface, is going to rapidly take the place of calls to service centers. It's already beginning to. I'm kind of surprised in some organizations to see the lower volumes, and we're kind of working with a lot of companies trying to figure, well, how do we drive those chat volumes? Because people seem to be inherently more satisfied with the results in a chat environment than they are in a call environment. So how do we make that happen? And that still kind of remains a puzzle for me. New things are coming in. They're coming in very fast, though. The cognitive aspect of being able to, we have something, Watson Agent Assist and Watson Assist that we use. Microsoft has a Cortana that I think is coming into its own to be able to do that. And the idea of being able to use and intercept the problems, anticipate the challenges that a user is doing from monitoring devices that you have in the environment, being able to kind of do what we used to call event correlation of that with performance data, and with network data, and then being able to actuate a change or make a change in an environment in an automated way is a significant difference. One example, you know, we've got one that we're working on right now, and it has to do with Active Directory. If you have a caller who needs an Active Directory change, can we fully automate that idea of an Active Directory change? Yes, we can. We can fully automate the ability of a user to ask for more storage. And so we're beginning to find these new pieces that we can fully automate in a way that really changes the service from calling in, opening up a ticket, okay, we got a ticket, I'm going to create an incident, and now from that incident, you're going to pass it off to a resolver group who's going to call back. All of that whole chain of what's been associated with systems management and service management environments, I think is going to be radically changed by cognitive. And we're already seeing it happen and kind of thinking of, all right, well, incident, problem, and change, what we've known from kind of the idle perspective, is really going to undergo some pretty significant changes, where we find that we can fix things in an automated way. You never need to go to incident. Problem becomes more automated. So I think that's going to really change. And then the release management piece of it, if you're having releases handled in the background, you're getting current branch for business, and that's coming down, that's really going to create that whole application release, packaging, and test environment. So this whole area is changing pretty rapidly. I want to give you a few examples of how, in this new world of going from just the notion of mobile to a digital transformation, has made a significant difference in a few different types of clients and in different ways. So the first one I wanted to mention is a global energy company, an oil and gas client. And this client was essentially a ground-up replacement of their old physical unified communications environment with a Skype for Business environment. And this is really, I think, kind of one of the, I think Skype for Business and the notion of moving away from the physical PBX into this environment is very disruptive in our environment. And it's disruptive in a good way, because I think ultimately it gives us the capability to do some of these things that we were talking about before, to enable some of this cognitive exchange, to move towards a more social environment through that enablement of a collaboration platform on our devices. But it also reduces the cost of supporting your environment, makes changes easier, makes moving whole organizations easier. It makes it much easier to ingest employees in a more dynamic way globally, whether it's seasonally. So for this particular client, you can see the volumes of users. It's about 150,000 users with an additional potential, but the ability to bring in Skype for Business, integrate it with their existing HD environment, and really build a whole new way of handling communication was a profound change for them. Another example, so it's not just a matter of full replacement in many cases. You've got a complex organization, and you need to integrate this new Skype for Business capability in a broader environment. So for this global accounting firm, we were able to bring in the Skype for Business and the collaboration suite to enable, to very quickly enable over 170,000 messaging, IM and conferencing presence to help with an entire core group of folks. But that had to be integrated with their existing voice. It had to be integrated with Cisco, Avaya environment, Tanberg environments. So it wasn't just a matter, in that case, of replacing it. It was a matter of augmenting the environment and adding net new capability, but continuing to support and manage kind of a more complex environment, be able to leverage it and do it. Now, for clients who are bringing in this new technology, for anybody who's got that new technology, when you're introducing new technology, we all like to talk about the return on investment. Man, you're going to introduce something and save money very quickly. I think what actually happens is you end up running kind of a parallel environment for a while. So when you first begin to take on a new technology and implement one of these new technologies, you have your standard run. You've got people who are trained, but you've got to do a bump here. You've got to get people who are trained. You need the help of Microsoft as service providers to be able to get to that hurdle. And I think you can. There's a lot of capability to kind of do it yourself. But I found, and one of the things that I think is an advantage of leveraging a partnership in this, is that you can kind of smooth that curve. You can get to an ROI much faster by not having to duplicate a lot of those resources. How do you get from here to being to a place where you can really begin to get a return on investment from that work that you're putting into creating a new platform? And one last example I'll mention, and this is an insurance firm. And this is a smaller implementation, but essentially the ability to create a high availability communication environment to they had a kind of a legacy and legacy and exchange environment that was prone to outages. So being able to come in and build a highly redundant hosted environment that wasn't as reliant on the physical the potential for a physical downtime in a data center, but really to have that service provided, it did a great job of radically increasing the availability of their communications environment, of their exchange environment. We were able to provide an extremely high service level, and it solved a huge set of problems for them very quickly from the standpoint of availability, kind of the old recoverability and business consistency point of view. So there's one other I'll just mention quickly, Dubai Healthcare Authority. And this was on-prem CRM deployment. And Murray's going to talk a little bit more about the CRM deployment. But this is essentially creating that infrastructure environment that will allow you then to be able to bring in something like Dynamics and serve your clients, be able to enable the healthcare providers to understand their environment much better. A lot of hospitals talk about that kind of improving the experience of patients as they come into the environment and go out of finally leave the environment, but being able to have just efficiency across that whole space. And this is an example where for Dubai Healthcare, bringing in IBM to enable the Dynamics environment provided a much better view of their clients, of their customers coming in, what their needs were, and the ability to kind of bring that all together in a place where it made more business sense for the client to make decisions. And finally, I'm going to go back to more my comfort zone in infrastructure and talk about what is it and how do we, you know, what does the enterprise need now to become a digital workplace? One of the things we think of within IBM is we want to move IT from being the enforcer to the enabler. So for a long time, IT organization, as you manage your environment, from the perspective of our businesses and the perspective of a lot of end users, we were kind of the no or the can't or the don't, or you know, you have security requirements or you know, you can't have that device. And what we've found is by enabling choice, and at IBM by really going having our IT organization move from an enforcer to an enabler, we've essentially created a huge bump in the end user satisfaction. And we really believe that happier employees make better employees, and more self-sufficient employees provide a much more consistent, they're able to deliver their service to your clients much more consistently. So one measurement I really like, and I learned this actually from a bank that I work with in Australia. We developed this model where how do you measure the efficiency in how you provide a workplace or how you support end users? As you make a transformation to a digital workplace, what's the measurement that you make? How does that become more efficient? And what we decided was it's really about the number of minutes of productivity that you return to the end user. So how much time does an end user have to spend, you know, futzing with their devices, or on service calls, or waiting for a call back from a resolver group? So we began to quantify that time, and we kind of shifted a metric. So our new metric in a year-to-year growth in that environment became, okay, we've quantified the number of minutes that end users had to spend with their devices. Now what we want to do is we want to drop that by 30% for the next year. And that became our bar. We want to drop the number of, and we did that through dropping the number of incidents, enabling users with the devices they wanted to use in the way they wanted to use them, and providing a greater degree of self-service, multi-channel interfaces to support. And that really became the way that we were able to turn that productivity measure back to the end user and deliver more productivity minutes. When we looked across the organization, we found, you know, we were delivering something like, you know, it became like 200 man years, you know, of time. So that those times begin to really, really add up when you look at them across an enterprise. So these three points, and this is really a slide from our own CIO within IBM and how they're thinking about what to provide to our own clients to become a better enabler and less of an enforcer. So these three things: modern devices, being able to deploy Surface, iPads, new Windows platforms like the Lenovo Yoga, Macs for those who want Macs, but being able to deploy modern devices and keep up with this kind of every 3 year consumer churn. Some of those devices may be wearable, and increasingly they're wearable, but really modern devices, providing user choice and being able to get them in their hands pretty quickly and without a lot of pain. Modern tooling to enable secure access, platform-based app stores, so that when you get a device, you're able to, that app store is ready and you can pull the applications that you need down, and automated provisioning, that kind of modern tooling, expanding our use of SCCM and Active Directory to enable some of that modern tooling in our delivery, you know, using SCCM and new tools like Enterprise Mobility Suite and the Secure, let me get the acronym right, SPE, Secure Productivity Suite, are all pieces of enabling that modern environment. And self-sufficiency and new support models. So for us, enabling those chat channels, enabling a Yammer listening channel to be able to support customers. Those are all things that are going into these three key areas: modern devices, modern tooling, and new self-sufficiency and support that are helping us create happier and more productive employees. So with that, I'm going to introduce my colleague, Murray Mitchell, who's going to talk a little bit more about how we deploy CRM on this base of infrastructure and tie that into our services.
Pat, thanks. Appreciate your insights on the digital workplace. And Pat did a little bit of advertising for IBM. I'll do a little bit more than she did. So what I'd like to do, though, is transition the discussion from, you know, what we're seeing in the marketplace to how IBM, in partnership with Microsoft, is helping clients, right, address these challenges and trends. And as Pat said, we're very fortunate and privileged to have two of our clients here with us from American Airlines Cargo, Dan Huber and Brian Hodges. And Brian and Dan will join me on stage at the end to share with you their transformation journey. So hopefully that'll be an insightful discussion. And I guess I should have practice this ahead of time to make sure I've got it going forward. There we go. Okay. As Pat said, I'm responsible for our global Microsoft consulting practice. And as such, our group is charged with making investments in Microsoft technologies that are relevant to clients that we can bring to bear to help them in their transformation journey. Our strategy is pretty simple, right? It's a three-pronged approach. Deliver on cloud, embedded cognitive capabilities where appropriate, and then a sector or industry go-to-market and delivery approach. So when we talk about delivered on cloud, our group is very comfortable working in a Microsoft Azure environment, an IBM SoftLayer environment, or some other cloud provider of choice. And we've done all three in a private, public, and hybrid scenario. Cognitive, as Pat alluded to, is a very, very important part of our overall strategy, and we've done a lot of investment in integrating cognitive, specifically our Watson solution and capabilities, into Microsoft technologies with a particular focus on CRM. There's been a really, really nice integration and marriage between Watson and Microsoft CRM, and I'll share with you a couple of examples of that in a little bit. And then finally, our approach is industry-based, right? We don't build out a lot of cross-industry solutions. Our solutions and offerings are very focused on and directed at the industries and the clients in those industries that we work with. We group our offerings and capabilities, and when I say capabilities, I mean our people skills, into four Microsoft product groups, big data and analytics, with a specific focus on Power BI and more recently Azure IoT Suite. We've had a long and large investment in capabilities and solutions around the Microsoft Dynamics product, specifically CRM and AX. In the mobile enterprise and collaboration space, we're doing an awful lot of work today in the Office 365 product. And more recently, you may have seen our announcement in July where we announced business apps for Windows 10 Surface tablets. And that is catching fire for us. A lot of clients are quickly asking us to build out these apps specifically for them. We're doing that in two industries right now, banking and consumer products, and we'll be expanding into other industries as time goes by. And then in application development and cloud, I mentioned Azure, big investment there in skills, and we've had a long time and very large investment in .NET, so we've got a large portfolio of skills that we apply to the .NET technology. We're a global practice. We have capabilities and solutions across four major geographies. In North America, that would be Canada and the US. In Europe, virtually every major country. Middle East and Africa. And then in Asia Pacific, the ASEAN region, China, Japan, and India. We've got longtime practices of individuals and solutions that we're taking to market in those geographies. We've got over 10,000 resources worldwide, so we've got a large portfolio of skills, and Microsoft has honored us with some awards, including their Inner Circle Award and President's Club Award, which they designate for their top systems integrators. I mentioned industry, and as I said, that's really a cornerstone of how we go to market, how we deliver services, and how we work with clients. We deliver Microsoft services across 12 different industries, and we build out solutions not in a lab. We don't have the build it and they will come approach. We actually build our solutions with clients and then commercialize them for other clients in that industry. A great example of this is our banking CRM solution. We built the solution initially with a very large bank in North America. Now we're commercializing it to other banks globally. We've integrated Watson into the solution, and we think Watson really supercharges the additional functionality that we've built into this banking solution. So we take the base Microsoft CRM application, we've built now 15 additional user scenarios, so we've added functionality specific to the banking industry, and we've integrated Watson. So as an example, if your bank is using this particular solution, and you call in or you're chatting, you're talking to or chatting with Watson. And as an example, Watson has a tone analysis capability. So if you are being detected by Watson to have some level of dissatisfaction, whatever that might be, Watson immediately routes you to a live person. Watson also gives bankers the ability to upsell and cross-sell to customers based on products that they have or products that they should have based on their existing product set. So we've had great success with this solution, and we're building out similar solutions and have built out similar solutions in state and local government, retail, and insurance. So this whole cognitive element of digital transformation is really taking charge in a big, big way and really being radically accepted by clients all over the world. The other thing that we believe is a real differentiator for us is what we call design thinking. So this is something that we try to infuse in every one of our Microsoft projects. In a nutshell, design thinking is really about building experiences and products with a focus on the people that are actually going to use those experiences and products. So what we do is we engage business users at the front end of the project. We get them to articulate, or ask them to articulate, their business challenges, their pain points. We then come up with a set of ideas, which then turns into a solution that we prototype. So it's a tangible prototype that the business users can look at and determine, does this solution work for me or not? If so, we move forward. If not, we go back and iterate new ideas and come up with a new solution. So it's a very agile approach, closed loop system, iteration. And at the end of the day, it really is all about shifting the thinking from a traditional approach where you're evaluating software functionality to address a complex, often loosely defined set of specifications, to an approach where we're looking for very specific, very tangible business outcomes that affect the business user in a positive way. We are also a Microsoft Cloud solution provider, and what this means is our clients can come to us as a one-stop shop, acquire products that are available on Microsoft Cloud, and we can bundle it together in a pay-as-you-go way. So we're very excited about this, and as you might imagine, more and more companies are evaluating this particular program. And so, just summarizing, why do they choose to work with us and Microsoft together? A lot of reasons. I talked about our global presence, so companies that are doing rollouts beyond one country oftentimes turn to us. Organizational change management, we think this is a real strength of IBM's consulting practice, and we believe it is a key component, if used properly, of project success, and if ignored, can be a key element of a troubled project. We like to, and oftentimes are articulating, business value. So it's not so much about, did the project complete on time and under budget, which are important elements of a successful project, but did we achieve business value? Did we define it up front, and did we achieve that business case? And we feel very strongly about articulating that before the project starts, and then measuring that metric as the project concludes. We've got a lot of implementation expertise, as you might expect. And then, again, the industry approach has been very successful for us, right? We're not trying to build cross-industry solutions that are all things to all companies. We've got a very strong, deep, and big focus on building out industry solutions that address the needs of individual companies within those industries. Now, what I'd like to do is introduce Brian Hodges and Dan Huber. Brian, but both are from American Airlines Cargo. I'd like to thank them for being here. And Brian is responsible for sales and marketing. Dan is responsible for customer experience. I'd like to have them come up and share with you their journey. I'll ask them a few questions, and then we'll open it up for questions if any of you have questions as well. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks again for being here. Really appreciate you making the trip from Dallas. So maybe Brian, Dan, maybe first you guys could just describe the transformation project that you worked with IBM and Microsoft on, the business drivers, some of the business challenges that you all were trying to address.
Okay. Yeah, I'll start that off just talking real quickly about what we were looking for from Dynamics for the sales organization. I don't think it's really fundamentally different than what most organizations are looking for. We're looking to tie all of those customer interactions together, give our sales folks visibility into all of those interactions, look for trends and opportunities, manage the leads process much more effectively than we were without a platform. Leveraging the information that a platform like that brings to the organization, and building some accountability, frankly, into our organization from a sales perspective that just didn't exist prior to having that type of information available. So that's what it meant for sales. I'll let Dan talk to what it means for the customer experience team.
Thanks, Brian. So from a customer experience perspective, what we were missing was case management. And we have contact centers in more than one location. So one call could come into one center, but it could impact another location, and that visibility wasn't there. And we also work with cross-departmental teams. The frontline customer may have information or have issues that need to be escalated up to a sales rep on Brian's team. And that visibility wasn't there before we launched Dynamics with the CRM product. So that's really what we were looking for, was case management from the contact center perspective.
Thank you. So you mentioned Dynamics CRM. I'm sure you had choices in terms of the solution software that you eventually selected. I'm just curious if you'd share why Microsoft was ultimately selected.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit, I'll step back a minute and actually talk a little bit about our business. Cargo and air logistics, very fascinating industry, but one that actually lags behind from a technology perspective. We operate, you know, sort of 20, 25 years in the past, if you look across the industry with freight forwarders and really with the other airlines and partner airlines. With the merger that we had with US Airways, we actually had an opportunity to sort of step back, evaluate our business, and make some investments in our future. And we identified early on a CRM platform as really the first step towards modernizing what we do as a cargo business at American Airlines. We're very fortunate to get that funding and to go out and actually start looking at different products in the marketplace. We looked at three major solutions, and really, you know, as we looked at our technical requirements, and I can tell you that all three of those solutions really met the foundational elements of what we wanted to do for our business. So we had to actually start going beyond that. And, you know, we were looking for a strategic partner. And Microsoft certainly fits that for American Airlines. They are a strategic partner for us. We've done a lot of business, a great history, and a good relationship. So that was there. But we, you know, obviously we wanted a product that had a great roadmap to the future. And we felt like Dynamics had that as well. And, you know, it's something that actually, you know, you see when you come to something like this. You can see how that product fits into the overall product portfolio for the company. It's important to them. It's aligned to the rest of their product suite. So that was important. And then lastly, what, interestingly enough, when we were looking at a solution, the passenger side of our business, which is very fundamentally different, they already had a CRM platform, but they weren't exactly happy with what they had. And so they were going to market and looking to say, hey, do we need to make a change? And as part of that change process for them, they actually established a test user group of their hardcore users, and they looked at Dynamics. And the overwhelming feedback from that group, even though they had several years of experience in an existing product, was that they loved Dynamics and they loved using it. They loved the interface. It was simple. It made sense to them. They could use it across their different devices very, very easily. So that had a huge impact on us. And we ultimately decided that Dynamics was the right solution for us. And I can also tell you that the passenger side ultimately decided to make a change as well. So both organizations are adopting Dynamics.
Great. Thanks, Brian. And I guess consistent with the selection of partner question, you obviously chose to work with IBM on this project. Can you share some of the criteria used and why you ultimately decided to work with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, you know, I'll harken back to what I said earlier about looking for a strategic partner. And somebody who could actually, you know, they were technically competent, knew the product, but that could actually come in and help challenge what we do as a business unit. We weren't just looking for a platform. We were looking, you know, you can go out and you can implement a Dynamics platform across your organization. But if it's not seen as something that's going to fundamentally alter how you conduct business and how your salespeople do their jobs on a daily basis, they just see it as another place to enter data. And we didn't want that. And so what we were looking for in an integrator was someone who could obviously come in and help us put it in place, get the data in place, but also challenge our processes, help us to really have a vision for how the product would impact the day-to-day user and how it could enable the users to be much more effective and efficient in their jobs. And really, we saw that that's what IBM brought to the table. They brought that expertise, that history, and knowledge base to really push us, not just provide a solution.
Great. So I talked a little bit about design thinking and agile methods, and just curious if you utilized any of that in this project, and if so, you know, what value did it provide?
Yeah.
I was involved with this more than Brian was, but we did use Agile, and it was something that did help right from the very beginning by bringing in cross-departmental groups to understand what the need was and get their feedback, and then the overall collaboration, you know, with our daily scrums and, you know, reprioritizing what needed to happen to get to the end project.
Okay, great.
Yeah, let me add something real quick to that. So my team does have operational ownership of the CRM tool. In fact, we have one of our administrators here today, Ray Daniel, who's sitting here at the front. You wave to everybody, Ray. Very much involved in the Agile process and involved in implementing new improvements and things like that. We're moving very, very quickly. We launched in May for sales. We launched in July for customer experience, but we're constantly adding new and new improvements and listening to the feedback we're getting from the field, and Agile's definitely allowed Ray and his team to do that effectively.
Right. So for any other companies that may be in the audience here that are looking to, you know, change and improve their customer experiences, any lessons learned, any advice, anything you might have done a little differently in the process?
I think from my perspective, it was really involving the frontline users, mm-hmm. you know, getting their feedback on what would make it easier for them mm-hmm. To achieve what we were looking for. Okay. So we had them involved from the very beginning. We had them involved in the testing. So just that involvement was very important for us.
Okay, so. Great. And I know it's early in the cycle. I know that you went live just a few months ago, if I'm not mistaken. But have you seen any early, you know, value realization benefits that you can quantify? And if so, how are you measuring those?
So my team launched after Brian's team. And for us, it really is that visibility into our customers' interactions. And when there is follow-up needed, in a contact center environment, it can be challenging to pass responsibilities when you're in a 24-hour environment. This is helped by being able to assign the cases that need follow-up, and it can go between locations with ease. So.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I'll just follow that up. From a sales perspective, the amount of communication that's going on, not just horizontally across our different sales reps, but vertically in the management chain, is increased significantly. It's great from where I sit to be able to hear our VP of sales have the conversations with his regional account managers, and I can tell that he's pulled up 360 and he's looking through opportunities in each of the different regions and giving them instant feedback or saying, hey, we need to see more activity, or why is this not happening, and what's the status of this opportunity. From a metric standpoint, which is now what my team is primarily focused on, we are seeing some very, very positive signs in a very short period of time around efficiency of the sales process, more success. It appears to us that reps are actually able to, every month over month, we're seeing more airway bills generated per opportunity than the prior month. That's a very, very important number for us, and one that we actually were surprised to see so early on.
Well, before we open it up for questions from the crowd, I'll ask you guys if there's any other comments you'd like to make, anything that I might have missed in my questions.
No, the value of the product speaks for itself. You know, if you don't have one in your organization, you need one. We went a long, long time in our history without it, and it was probably for a good 10 years is what our sales managers were asking for the most. Even though they knew that it would bring a new level of accountability, scrutiny, they knew they absolutely had to have it to be successful.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again, guys, for being here and joining us. We've got a few minutes left if anybody has any questions. We've got these mics set up, or you can yell and I'll try to interpret for everybody the question. And by the way, Pat's available too if you want to come up and join us, Pat, for questions. Yeah.
That's a great question. So we really received our funding and started on the project around November of last year. And if you take into account the holiday period where you essentially lose a month at the end of 2015, we had a test solution up and running for our initial group of champions, I believe by March. So very, very short time frame. We're talking really 3 months, effectively, where we had a solution that we were iterating on and improving. And then about 45 days later, we were up and running in a production environment, and we went live for sales. Yeah, so the contact center was followed about 60 days, not even quite 60 days thereafter.
It was the same length of time to get set up. So Brian's team started a couple months ahead of me. So we actually had the same roadmap for completion.
I'll just add, at American Airlines, that is lightning fast, okay, for IT project.
Said when you talked to IBM, right, you had some other companies that you were invested with as far as collaborating, flexing service users' needs, you know, kind of the whole portfolio of services from a shared service organization. What were some of the primary limiters or constraints from the other companies that kind of fell off the roadmap and IBM became the chosen? Because they're either from a small to a large, they all had obviously initial value versus the weighted cost.
Yeah, that's a really good question. As I look back on that, we had some folks who came to the table. They were great integrators. That's what they did. That was their technical expertise and the way that their teams were designed. And so that was a plus for them. But, you know, we were looking at kind of that broader picture of, like I said, who was going to challenge us, who was going to be there, 6 months after the project's completed, who did we have a good strategic relationship with? IBM, that was certainly the case. And then also, who was actually going to be on the project team? What types of resources were going to be embedded at American Airlines and for how long? That was very important to us. And, you know, at the end of the day, we just felt like those were the right answers and pointed towards IBM.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Appreciate it. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you for joining us for the session today, and I hope you have a great rest of the conference. And Dan and Brian, thank you so much for making the trip to be here with us today.
Thanks for
really
having
appreciate
you
it. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks again.
That was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot.